And that's where we are. We're going down little river monster hunting, and we're doing it with Jeremy Wade. We'll take your calls for him coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We'll try and get you an open line for Jeremy Wade of River Monsters on Animal Planet. And I think the Skype line is open. I think that's one thing we have open now. But we'll get to your questions and comments for the rest of this hour. I strongly encourage you to go back and catch earlier part of the conversation with Coast Insider at coasttocoastam.com. If you haven't signed up, it's a great deal. West of the Rockies, Patrick is in Portland, and he's been waiting the longest for Jeremy Wade. Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Yeah, the reason I was waiting so long is I wanted to determine if I want to still stay in my fishing boat on the river.
No.
Okay.
Go in, well, I dare you.
Yeah, okay. You know, in regard to these bull sharks and the event that they can go upriver, would it be safe to assume that if you're in a freshwater river environment where sea lions are seen feeding on salmon, that there are bull sharks there too?
Sea lions feeding on salmon.
Yeah, if sea lions are there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about bull sharks is they're a warm water fish. Their normal range is warm and temperate coastal waters. So they're only going to swim up rivers where the mouth is in a tropical or temperate area. So something I'm just sort of thinking, something like the Columbia River, Pacific Northwest. You're not going to get bull sharks. So it's only in certain geographical areas. They're not going to go up all rivers.
What would be the most dangerous, if we could say that, of the fish in something like the Columbia?
Well, I mean, the Columbia, you've got very big sturgeon. Very happily, what's really good to see there, we did a film there a couple of years ago, that the sturgeon has really come back, having almost reached local extinction there. Now, sturgeon are, they will predate on shad and small salmon, but the thing that sturgeon sometimes do, which happens in the Suwannee River in Florida, is that they sometimes jump out of the water, and if you happen to be underneath them in a boat when they land, that's very bad news. There have even been fatalities in Florida. People have been knocked off jet skis and things like that. This isn't a man-eating fish, but they're very large, potentially, white sturgeon, potentially around sort of 2,000 pounds. I mean, nobody knows exactly what.
What did you say it was? How many pounds?
Potentially about 2,000 pounds.
A ton?
Yeah.
1 ton of sturgeon?
Yeah.
Wow. That's not the biggest freshwater fish, would it be?
Well, the question of what's the biggest freshwater fish is one that people sort of argue about quite a lot. I mean, the sturgeon is another fish like the salmon, like eels, which do spend part of their life in the sea. So that they put on a lot of their weight in the sea, although you have got some landlocked populations of sturgeon. But so it's not really a true freshwater species, but it is the largest fish that is found in freshwater.
Okay, because sturgeons are like cousins of barracudas, right?
I don't know about that.
Oh, wouldn't
well,
say?
Well, they're very distant cousins.
So distant cousin of a barracuda. All I mean by that is, I mean, I know I live here in Minnesota, and I know there are lots of stories of people. I don't say just stories. There are reports, verifiable reports of people who, as you said earlier, missing chunks of the back of their calves, missing fingers. And there are stories that go back a few generations about missing kids in some of these rivers because of the sturgeon.
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, sturgeon tend to, they jump out of the water. And I think sometimes they're just jumping and the boat happens to be in the same place. Other times, although sturgeon are normally bottom feeders, they can sometimes bask near the surface. And if your boat gets too close, the sturgeon sees it as an intrusion on its body space and might sort of jump, possibly attempting to land on the boat or see you off. I have heard stories of people saying they've been chased by a large fish in the water that put up a big bow wave, and you know, that could have been a sturgeon. But it's just what we're talking about there is just bulk. It, you know, it hasn't really got teeth. It's not going to eat you. But it's a large animal that wants its body space respected, shall we say.
Okay. Well, 2,000-pound sturgeon gets my respect. I'll just say that. First-time caller line, Jeff is in Richmond, Virginia, for Jeremy Wade River Monsters. Jeff?
Hey, Jeremy. I love the show. Hey, I got a question is about when you come into a new area, particularly some of these remote areas where you know there's not a lot of information about the fish, do you have any general methodologies or tips about how you, you know, figure them out and learn how to catch them?
As I mentioned earlier, I mean, one place I always start is talking to the local people, sort of trying to get the confidence of the local fishermen. Fishermen can be very secretive, or they can be very helpful. It depends how they react to you. And I mean, very often it takes a little bit of time to get to know people. You can't just sort of steam in there and demand answers. You've got to go through sort of getting to know you process as well. Something else I try and do if I've got time is just do some work on the local language. I'm not a natural linguist, but it's something that really pays dividends. And because I've got the motivation to do it, I find that I do manage to learn a certain amount. You don't need to get fluent, but even just making an effort in these places, it goes a long way to getting the people on your side, and they are the people ultimately who tend to sort of take you to the fish that you're looking for.
Well, it says in your wiki page, so I'll ask you this, that you are fluent in Portuguese, that you became fluent because you were going to spend a lot of time in Brazil. True?
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, Portuguese is my best language, but I know bits and bobs of all sorts of other languages like Hindi, Thai, Lingala, which is West African equivalent to Swahili, and just you know wherever I go, I try and pick up a little bit.
Peter is in Fort Charlotte, Florida, on Coast to Coast. Peter, you're talking with Jeremy Wade, River Monsters.
Hello, Jeremy and Dave's Tiamat, Ian.
Thank you, sir.
I just wanted to ask a very I wanted to ask about a sawfish originally, but I started thinking about the basis of Jaws, Peter Benchley's Jaws, and I kind of wonder if that wasn't a bull shark that was swimming up the New Jersey rivers attacking all these people. I was just wondering what your thought might be on that.
Well, I think it was a bull shark of the famous attacks in New Jersey. If that's the one, if we're talking about that, the one back in the 19, it was like
40s or 50s.
I was going to say even earlier than that, but fair enough.
Yeah, probably. I thought they had caught a 7-foot great white eventually, and
maybe.
That was I just wondered, you know, what your thoughts were on that, because when you were talking about bull sharks, to me, that's amazing.
It's interesting because I think, as Ian said, the Jersey Shore attacks that did inspire, you know, that was the material that Pete eventually was sort of working on. And there were, I cover this in some detail in my book, you know, there were a handful of human attacks there, and somebody caught a juvenile great white afterwards, and then no more people were attacked by sharks. And so the assumption at the time was it was a great white, but because I think two or three of these four or five attacks were actually in fresh water up Matawan Creek, that wouldn't have been a great white. Those would have been bull sharks. And as I was saying earlier, that although the numbers are low, bull sharks are actually more of a threat generally to people because they tend to be more in the water where people are, and also that water tends to be quite sort of low visibility. Sometimes bull sharks just, it's not a desire to eat or whatever. They don't have hands, so there's something in the water, and you know, what they think is just an exploratory nibble to see what it is, it, you know, can be a fatal wound to a human being.
We're talking River Monsters with Jeremy Wade, the book, the TV show, the same name, and Ted is in central Montana on Coast to Coast. Ted?
Yeah, good evening, Jeremy and Ian. It's really great to have you on the radio.
Thank you. It's good to have him on, isn't it? Ted, are you getting any river monsters in central Montana?
You know, we get sturgeon, and we get several other fish up on the Missouri, which has been pretty rough due to all the flooding, so we haven't
sure.
been up there. But I guess they probably don't weigh more than about 200 or 300 pounds on average.
That's still pretty big.
Well, you know, they're just big old fish, and they eat plankton. Some of them do. And so you don't need to worry about them getting you. What I was going to ask Jeremy about is what kind of a lever drag reel does he use, and what's his favorite kind of reel?
Right. Well, yes. I tend to use all sorts of stuff. I've got a pretty sort of motley collection of gear that I put together over the years. But as far as reels go, I tend to use Shimano quite a lot. They seem to be, you know, sort of quite reliable, not too not too pricey. But there's other good makes out there. But I've got one. Apart from the fact that I find it very hard to get the turn the clicker off, which is a bit annoying. But that's what I generally tend to use.
You said Shimano? Yes. Okay. Dave is in Sacramento, California. Wildcard line on Coast to Coast. Dave.
Yeah, Jeremy and Ian, it's good to talk to you. Long time listener.
Thank you.
I'm a fisherman in Sacramento. All my friends are, and I'm going to mention the sturgeon too. I'm going to give you a little quick story. I'm not going to take up a lot of your time, but
that's okay.
Apparently, you remember Errol Flynn, the original Robin Hood?
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently, he had I think it was like a little schooner, and the mast broke off under the Ice Street Bridge in the Sacramento River. It sunk, and then they tried to raise it, and the divers, like you were talking about before, were scared to death, and they took off because they said there were these huge fish down there. Ended up, Department of Fish and Game thinks it's a pair of white sturgeon, and this pair, they think, are about 2,000 pounds each. All right, so this is somewhere around the city of Sacramento, up near Miller Park. So, Jeremy, if you're ever in Sacramento, you might want to check that out. Even though these aren't predatory fish, a couple of 2,000-pounders still pretty interesting.
Yeah, that'll get your attention.
Yeah.
That'll get me out of the water.
Yeah. What's really frustrating about that is that there are that is exactly the kind of story that I'm interested in. But the trouble is with sort of old stories that, you know, the world has changed a lot, and the big fish are more rare than they used to be. They're harder to find. But that is very interesting. I hadn't heard that one before. Errol Flynn, apparently, I heard he used to go tuna. I might be getting this mixed up, but there used to be a lot of tuna caught off in the north of England, and all sorts of people from all around the world used to fish there. And I think he was one of the people who used to fish there. It's my Errol Flynn story, thought it's worth.
Well, he spent a lot of time on boats doing what? That's also a matter of Hollywood legend. Lily is in Anchorage, Alaska, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast for Jeremy Wade of River Monsters. Lily?
Hello. I had a quick question for you, Jeremy. And, also, hello, Ian.
Hi, Lily.
Jeremy, I was wondering if you were going to ever try to search for Loch Ness Monster in Lake Loch Ness.
Yeah. Ever done an actual Nessie search?
Well, no. Interestingly enough, I did a program a couple of years ago in Alaska, in Lake Iliamna, which has its own equivalent, sort of a North American Loch Ness monster story. And as we've been talking about sturgeon recently, I concluded that is probably a landlocked population of white sturgeon. Now, I didn't catch one from there, though. It was, you know, that was my conclusion, and I sort of tested it elsewhere. Because sometimes life is just too short to catch a fish in a big body of water. Now, Loch Ness, I used to have an uncle who lived right next to Loch Ness, and I've been up there, and obviously it's something that I've thought about. I've got my own theories what it might be, yes, I think there could be something behind those stories. There could be something that might be catchable, or I might be 100 years too late. whether or not there is, you know, there is time in my lifetime to ever do anything about it, I don't know. I possibly doubt it, but watch this space, as they say. You never know.
Yeah. Well, if anybody could do it, you could. And I, you know, I know that there are all sorts of challenges. I was on Loch Ness a couple of years ago, and it is like, it's like taking a boat onto a lake of coffee. I mean, you just, it's just black. You can't see very far. Yeah. And I know that it's very deep. And, but I do think it doesn't, it just seems like they're, we don't know what it is, whether it is some giant sturgeon or something related to that, or whether it's a reptile, I don't know. But it just seems like there's too many credible reports from people who are not inclined to want to ruin their reputation, and I believe them.
Yeah, I think lots of the stories can be explained away by sort of natural phenomenon or things, you know, people sort of not seeing something correctly. But as you say, it's very deep. A lot of people always assume that water is deep, and often it isn't. But Loch Ness is very deep. It's, I think, you know, sort of 800 or 900 foot in the deepest point, and you know, caused by this sort of geological rift. So there's a lot of water there. You know, something could be hiding down there for sure.
Wade is in Alberta, Canada, on Coast to Coast on a wild card line for Jeremy Wade. Go ahead, Wade.
Hello. Hey. I was wondering if Jeremy, have you ever tried fishing the Fraser River in Western Canada?
I haven't. I know a few people who have, and I must have, you know, I don't mean any disrespect to the Fraser River, but when we try and fish places that haven't been sort of so much fished by other people. A few fishing shows have featured white sturgeon, and the Fraser River tends to be the river of choice because there are very big fish there. But when I was fishing for white sturgeon, we instead went to the Columbia, possibly just giving a bit of attention to a river that doesn't get so much attention. I would like to visit the Fraser for sure. I haven't done yet. It's on my radar, shall we say, definitely.
Thank you, Wade. Appreciate that. Let me ask Jeremy, Wade, do you often still just go pleasure fishing?
Somebody asked me a little while ago how I relax, and I sort of thought about it for a while, and I said at the moment I relax by not going fishing, which is slightly odd thing to do. No, I don't at the moment, and I would like to get back to that at some point. But the filming schedule is very intense at the moment.
Yeah, so you sort of enjoy your time now that you spend on land, like maybe in your house.
Yes, just sort of staring at the ceiling and getting my energy back before the next trip.
Got to be a little hard. I mean, I don't know whether you're a family man or you want to talk about that, but you spend so much time traveling around the world. I think it would be hard to have kind of a steady domestic life.
It is, yes. I mean, I do have a fairly nomadic existence even when I'm at home. Thing is, I've been doing it for so long, and when I first started traveling, it was pre-internet, and I would literally just disappear and come back 3 months later, and nobody would hear from me in the meantime. And the first couple of times I did this, my parents and brothers and sisters, you know, got sort of would worry about me, but they've got used to me coming back, even though I might have scrapes. And again, nowadays it is easier generally to keep in touch, although some of the places where we film, you know, we still don't have brilliant communications.
I'm playing as a bumper going into the bottom of the hour. The classic gospel song, Wade in the Water. I don't know if you know this song, but it's a...
I know it, yeah.
Yeah, it's perfect for you. Jeremy Wade, River Monsters, on Coast to Coast. And we'll get to your question, your comment. We'll give you the numbers coming up here just a second to join in the conversation. Do you know of a river monster near you? Is there a story that you can inform us on that perhaps no one's ever heard before? We'll get to that coming up next. And thanks again for all the people who are adding me as Twitter followers. Deacon Punnett, D-E-A-C-O-N, Deacon Punnett, on my Twitter account. You'll find that there. And I was just talking about Jeremy there in the Twitter feed a few minutes ago. Fine, right. Back with you and your comments next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. And it's going to be very hot tomorrow all across the country. You may be tempted to go to a river near you try not to think about the river monsters that may be lurking. And maybe for a beach read this summer, pick up that new book by Jeremy Wade, who takes your calls next. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. By the way, George is going to be doing a show on strange creatures coming up on Monday night's Coast to Coast. Helena is in Long Beach, California on Coast to Coast for Jeremy Wade and River Monsters. Helena?
Bom dia, Ian, and bom dia, Jeremy. Tudo bom? This is, I'm just saying hello in Portuguese. my question for you, Jeremy, what is your favorite country?
Yeah, when you go to them, yeah.
Oh, very difficult one to answer there. And the country I've been to most is Brazil. That's one of my favorite countries. I find myself almost saying the Congo. The Congo, it's a love-hate relationship. The logistics there can be a nightmare. The bureaucracy is a nightmare. But get on the river, staying in a village, and the fishing, the fact that you're not going to find any other tourists, anybody from outside. That would sort of be an answer, but with that proviso about the whole the difficulty of just sort of getting there.
What country do you hate to go to? Congo
that
again?
That would also be the Congo. I don't know. There have been some experiences while we've been filming that we haven't been able to feature where we have met with obstruction. And normally when we film, everybody is incredibly helpful and all the rest of it. But there are exceptions to that. Very, very few, I have to say.
Ever run into cannibals or headhunters or anything like that?
I've run into former cannibals. We filmed in Papua New Guinea, and one of my crew at some point said something. He said, "Oh, I'm really boiling," or something. And this guy raised an eyebrow at him and said, "He said you should be nearly ready soon then." But he was, said in jest. But certainly the parents and grandparents of those people would have been cannibals, which is, cannibalism is actually an interesting subject, and it's not straightforward. There's a whole sort of ritual element to it as well. And it still does exist in parts of Papua New Guinea.
That's what I've heard.
Not the part I was in, mate.
But not the part you were in. And how about when you're going up the Amazon, have you ever run into, are there natives there still that are unfamiliar with white Europeans or with camera crews, or have you ever had a problem where you had to try to explain yourself to people that were more interested in blow darts than hearing about
the Amazon? There are still uncontacted tribes there, not so many, and in quite remote areas. The Amazon generally, when we film there, goes relatively smoothly, largely because I've spent so much time going there myself. I tend to know a lot of people there, and also speaking the language helps. But there are fairly sort of lawless parts of the Amazon.
Right.
I have had people sort of pointing guns at me and stuff. I mean, normally nothing to do with fishing, but... It's, again, traveling generally anywhere, despite language differences, a lot of it is to do with just common sense and just knowing when to back off and when to how to avoid certain situations, and a lot of those things are fairly sort of universal. Just trust your instincts, really.
And where was it that the plane crashed?
That was in the Amazon. Yes, I was making an earlier series for Discovery Europe, and we were doing our aerial filming and in a single engine plane, and the engine exploded, and so we crashed into the canopy, and the cameras were running and got it all on film, which was a bit of a scoop, but
really.
luckily we all walked away from that completely unscratched. Very miraculous escape.
I'll find a way to use that in the American footage. I haven't seen that in River Monsters. Did you use it?
No, they did actually show earlier this year. They did actually put out a shortened version of that. They got it from Discovery Europe, and I think they called it River Monster's Lost Reels. So that might come around again at some point.
Okay, but, I'd like to see that.
That has been shown in the U.S.
Dan is in Memphis, Tennessee, east of the Rockies, for Jeremy Wade River Monsters on Animal
right.
Planet. Dan? Dan? Oops.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can now. Yep. Go ahead.
Hey, Jeremy, I've worked on a river all my life, Mississippi River, Tennessee River, Ohio, and I heard you talking about this, but I caught just the end of it. Would you be going to the Tennessee River to some of those dams? Was that what you were referring to?
Sorry, I didn't hear you very, very clearly there.
It sounds like he's breaking up. It sounds like what he was saying, the Tennessee Dam or any other dams in the middle of the United States, would you be looking at those dams for the possibility of one of those catfish stories?
I was filming earlier this year looking into these big catfish stories. I, unfortunately, I can't say too much about what's coming up, in case it sort of gives the game away. But I did visit a large lake in the U.S. a couple of months ago, which is a dammed lake where there are stories. And as I said, this kind of story, you get them all over the U.S. So I almost had to sort of stick a pin in the map or look,
right.
Where most stories were coming from. But that is something that will feature in season 4 next year.
In California, Chris is hanging on for Jeremy Wade, River Monsters. Go ahead, Chris.
Hello, Mr. Wade.
Hello.
Yep. We can hear you.
Yep.
It's an honor to talk to you. And Mr. Pennant, it's an honor to talk to you. I'm a stand-up comedian here in Visalia, California.
Oh, wonderful.
And I love your sense of humor. But
thank
I have a
you.
Serious question for Mr. Wade here. I love your show. And I want to know how long it takes for you to, find out about the monster, the legend, and then actually catch them.
Yeah, how long in between, sort of soup to nuts on any individual show, Jeremy?
Right. Well, I mean, that's very variable because, season 1, we were looking at fish that I'd been doing my own self-funded research into for 20, 25 years in some cases. We're now getting into more unknown territory, and I suppose typically we have researchers trawling internet papers, sometimes making sort of recce trips, but not very often. But that will be a few months. And then the actual filming tends to be very quick and concentrated. We're filming normally for about 2 weeks, but by the time we arrive, we've got people lined up, we've got destinations lined up. There tends to be quite a lot to do apart from fishing, so it's very intense, very high pressure, and everything really depends on whether we catch the fish or not. So it can be quite tense and quite hard on the nerves, but it generally seems to work. Normally we come away with what we went for.
Norman is in Idaho Falls, Idaho, on Coast to Coast for Jeremy Wade. We'll get to as many calls as we can before the top of the hour. Norman?
Yes, I've got a couple of questions. Has he ever heard of the red shark in Lake Nicaragua? In Nicaragua, it's supposedly a freshwater. And then has he heard about the paddlefish in the Missouri River?
Paddlefish, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a
paddlefish, yes. I mean, incredible fish. Problem from my point of view is you can't catch them on normal fishing methods because they're a filter feeder. But again, this is something I have looked at, and we stay tuned for season 4.
Okay. Well, tell me what is it, paddlefish? What is that? Why is that? Why would that be special?
A paddlefish, well, one of the fish with which possibly laid claim to the title of biggest true freshwater fish in the world is the Chinese paddlefish in the Yangtze River. Now, it looks like they're extinct now, but there is a relative of that which lives in the U.S., which grows very large. It's a very strange-looking thing. It has got this sort of extension on its nose that looks like it's a bit like a sawfish without the the teeth around the edge, and it has a
right.
huge gaping mouth, a bit like a basking shark, and it just swims around with its mouth open. And it's basically feeding every time it takes a breath or every time water goes through its gills. They go very, very large, and people commonly catch them just by, it's called snagging. It's just a bare hook, and they hook onto them. And that's something that I feel I can't really do, because I try and make the program fish-friendly as far as possible. I always release the fish, but it is a fascinating species, and again, it's a very unique species, and it's right there in the US, and not a lot of people know that it's there. Regarding the shark question, I haven't heard them called red shark, but again, bull sharks swim up the Rio San Juan on the border between Nicaragua and Costa Rica, and they were incredibly numerous, and they were there in Lake Nicaragua as well, way inland. There was a commercial shark fishing operation, though, which has practically wiped them out. There were lots of swordfish there as well. They've pretty much gone as well. But, yeah, that's another example of where bull sharks were very numerous in a river.
And about those sawfishes, are there species of sawfish that are freshwater?
Yes, I mean, a lot of the species spend part of their life in freshwater.
Okay.
I made a program in Australia on, it's called the freshwater sawfish.
That's what I saw, okay.
I caught a juvenile one, 7 foot long, which would then swim out to the sea and possibly grow to 20 foot. They used to be very common worldwide. Again, they've largely declined because that saw gets tangled up in nets very easily, and
right.
The fishermen would just kill them. But they were in Florida. They were quite numerous in Florida. There are still a few in Florida. I've spoken to someone who's caught a few, but they turn up very rarely. There was one in the press a few weeks ago, St. Lucie River, I think, that was seen swimming around, and then I think it was found dead.
Okay.
Foot long, something like that.
30 foot long.
There's a few in Florida.
I saw that, but now I got it confused, because there's now, I'm going to say this, you don't have to, kind of a cheap knockoff of your show on another channel is doing a show about large freshwater river fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other programs, yes, yeah.
And you were the first.
Well, actually, I'll tell you, I think one of the programs might have been going for longer or in a previous incarnation, but it wasn't reaching the same audience. And in a sense, I do see River Monsters in a way as being, fairly unique in its genre. It's not a fishing show, as I said earlier. It has elements of science, but it's not a conventional natural history program.
No.
It's a combination. And, we try and make it this sort of mystery story. It's entertaining, but also along the way we hope to educate. So it's sort of in its own genre. And
I would say that.
Yeah, I'll watch those other programs as
yeah.
well. But I think we go for a very wide audience. And
you do it best, and as I tweeted earlier, that your show couldn't be a better example of extreme fishing, even if the fish had guns, because, I mean, you make it a fair fight, and it's very interesting on how you do it. We'll get a couple other calls, and then we'll have to be done for the night for Jeremy Wade. Glenn is in Hernando, Florida, on Coast to Coast. Glenn?
Hey, Jeremy.
Hello.
Hey, Jeremy.
Got any river monsters down there, Glenn?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Got any river monsters down there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. That's about the fourth time we've said that.
Oh, yeah. I worked at a fish camp up in Dunellen, and a woman caught a fish, and I didn't know what it was, but the other guy that worked there, he said it was a pacu, and the guy and the woman that caught it, I knew them. And he caught that one, and he went back, and he said there was more of them over in that little area where he was at. But the one that they caught, we kept it in the holding tank, and it was the Star Banner, the newspaper, come and took pictures and video of it. And it was a big one. It was, I'd say it was, I can't really remember. I know it was over 5 pounds, but it was thick. It was about 4 inches thick and about, 11 and a half to maybe 12 inches tall.
Yeah.
And
okay.
like he said, it had teeth like a goat.
Yeah. And this the pacu, is that's a cousin to a piranha?
It's related to a piranha. The juveniles actually look very similar. They got a very similar to red belly piranhas. Yeah, I've heard of pacu being in Florida. Somebody told me that he'd seen one that looked about 20 pounds in one particular lake, and I think the pacu is one of the fish that's one of the exotic species that's most widely distributed in the U.S. And I don't think they're necessarily breeding, but they tend to survive quite well if people tip them out of a tank into the wild, which is not a particularly responsible thing to do. But they grow very big. They can be quite aggressive. They can start breaking the glass of your tank or whatever. And some people just in desperation, rather than kill them or hand them over to whoever, just sort of quietly dip it in a river or whatever. But yes, I have heard of pacu and considerably bigger ones in Florida.
If we hustle, we might be able to get everybody in. Hey, Lynn, you're talking with Jeremy Wade, River Monsters. Lynn?
Hey, Jeremy. I love your show. And Ian, I love your show also.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you ever heard of giant catfish.
Yeah, he's heard of them. But how big and where are they? In western North Carolina?
Yes, at the Nantahala Dam. It used to be a copper mining town, but they've made a dam there, and the catfish were spotted there, and they were as big as the boat. And rumor is that I hear two scuba divers went down, and
we've heard that. We had the story on earlier, Lynn, in a different form. So that's why I'm kind of smiling about it, because we did hear about that. But there you go, Jeremy, another location, another dam, same story.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure that I've heard this particular location before. As I say, if I had a map of the U.S., I'd now have dots sort of all over the place. There are lots of these stories. They're surfacing all over the place. And I think one thing it says is about, normally these stories, there is some truth behind them, and it's finding out, what that truth is. But another thing it says is that, I think people like to have, mystery, something they don't know about on their doorstep.
Right.
And, this is something I looked into this year, and the program will be coming out as part of season four.
I will look forward to that as part of season four. Paul, you get the last question, but we got to be fast for Jeremy Wade. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. Hey, Ian. Hey, Jeremy. I wanted to ask Jeremy if he ever thought about maybe doing an ocean monsters when he runs out of big fish in the river.
Time to head out to the big sea.
Good question. I mean, quite a few people have said this. I've started to dip my toe in, shall we say. I'm not a great expert at sea fishing. I've done a little bit. Freshwater is very much my area of expertise. But it is something that interests me. What I like about freshwater is they tend to be a bit more intimate. I mean, not always. There's more in the way of features. When I'm fishing, I try and think like a fish. Where would I be? And the ocean can be a bit daunting sometimes, all that expanse of water. And it appears to be all the same. Of course, it's not. You get different currents and all the rest of it. There is a possibility, but there are people who know a lot more about the oceans than I do. But
you'll figure it out.
Yeah, wait and see. I don't know what the future holds.
Season 5 coming up sometime. Thank you, Jeremy Wade. I hope you had a good time.
I enjoyed it very much, Ian. Thank you very much.
Well, you're just terrific, and I love the stories, and thank you for being so open about them, and we'll continue to watch both the new season, the DVDs for the old season, and the new book, River Monsters, Jeremy Wade, and enjoy, I hope, what is a wonderful rest of the weekend for you. Deus Tiamat, and I do too.